On opening day of the U.S. Open this year, a statue of Althea Gibson was unveiled. She broke the color barrier in tennis as the first African-American player to compete in the U.S. National Women's Tennis Championship in 1950. And at that time, women were not even being paid to play tennis. Just this week, Serena Williams won her 100th singles victory at the Open in dominant fashion.
Yes, and a match. Williams, he sets it over. 6-3, 6-4.
To fastest serve, 118.
For me, I have to be the greatest, whether it's against the second seed, the number one seed, or the number 80th player in the world. I have to show up, or else I'm going to go home.
Serena has the record for the most Grand Slam titles, and she's one of the best athletes we've ever seen. Her older sister Venus exited in the second round, but her career is also amazing. 7 Grand Slam singles titles, 12th all time. Between the sisters, they have 14 doubles titles, and they've never lost a Grand Slam doubles final. For the past 2 decades, the Williams sisters have made a space for themselves and for other women of color in a very white sport. And today they continue to dominate the field, even as they pave the way for others. Ahead of Serena's semifinal match tonight, we're looking at the legacy of the Williams sisters and their role in changing who gets to be a part of tennis at the highest level. Amira Rose Davis is with me for that. She's assistant professor of history at Penn State University and co-host of the Burn It All Down podcast. Amira Rose, welcome back to the Takeaway.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So lots going on, lots of numbers there. Let's talk about just the past week and a half at the Open. There was a powerful moment between two black players on the court here in New York. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, certainly. So Naomi Osaka and Coco Gauff had a match on Arthur Ashe under the lights. And Coco Gauff is the sensational 15-year-old who's just been storming into tennis. She was the youngest to qualify for Wimbledon. And now she's here playing deep into the U.S. Open. And she's, of course, playing Naomi Osaka, who won the U.S. Open on this court last year. And after Naomi Osaka defeated Coco, she actually asked her to stay on the court with her and share in the post-game interview and the post-game moment. And it was a scene very reminiscent of last year at the U.S. Open where Naomi beat Serena Williams and there was lots of tears abound. And they kind of stood in solidarity on the court together. And it was very powerful, especially because Naomi said, you know, I want you to do this. I want you to leave with your head held high. And she took a moment in the interview to turn to Coco's parents and say, you know, I watched you train. And she said a line that really jumped out to me, which is that, you know, it's unreal how far we've both made it together. And I think that a lot of people heard in that utteration of what it means to have these black women in this sport. And she's really speaking about the sustainability of this mentorship, this friendship, these cycles of mentorship that have opened up space for people to be unapologetically black and in this lily white sport.
I mean, that's one of the biggest things that stood out to me was just the need for that solidarity in a sport that's historically been very white and also very privileged. Can you talk a little bit about how not just Coco and Naomi have had to navigate the sport, but also how the Williams sisters really broke a lot of these barriers here? We mentioned Althea Gibson at the top of the show, but the Williams sisters, I think, were such a fundamental part of not just breaking the color barrier, but really sustaining the power of black women in this sport.
Yes, certainly. And so, like, obviously, Althea Gibson is really fundamental to thinking about this and people like Zena Garrison. But what the Williams sisters offered was a 1-2 punch that sustained for so long. Obviously, we're seeing it now. And it's really important to understand that the reaction that Venus and Serena get now and the kind of accolades and the chummy interviews, this is something that they only have because they're still in the game and because they're dominant. Like, they've forced the tennis establishment to wrap around them. And if you go back to very early on in their careers, you see some of the stuff they were fighting against. You see, you know, the beads flying out of Venus's hair and the umpire calling that an interference. And you see the tears and frustration when she's like, that didn't interfere with anybody. And you see the players who crashed into them. You see the rumors that their dad was over controlling them, fixing their matches. You see the racist chants. And if you put that into perspective, it starts to begin to paint a picture of how much they had to claw and fight to maintain in the sport. And because they had each other, they were really able to do that in a way. And because of their skill, where they were just unapologetic and they weren't leaving. They weren't going anywhere. And they forced the tennis attachment to yield to them around that. So what we're seeing now with them, A, still being in the game, but also opening doors for people like Naomi and Coco and Taylor Townsend and Sloane Stephens, you know, is really a testament to both their longevity and their tenacity from a very early age.
Another narrative that's come up quite a bit in Serena Williams' career is her relationship between her and Maria Sharapova. It's sometimes described as a rivalry. My issue with that, and I'd love to hear your thoughts, Amira Rose, is that Serena has defeated Sharapova in 20 of 22 matches. Why is it that the sports narrative around them continues to be a rivalry when, in fact, that to me is pure dominance?
Right. Yeah, no, this is one of those rivalries that is very much media fueled. I think when it really early on came about was that they represented these kind of polar opposites of the sport. Sharapova conventionally, you know, she's white, she's blonde, and she's smaller. And I think that it was something that was really easy to kind of grab onto when presenting, when trying to package the sport. And it sustained. And the, you know, narrative about it being a rivalry is still hanging on, even though on the court, it's not really any competition at all.
Let's talk about where Serena has gotten some competition. It's from her own sister, Venus. And I wonder the way that both of their careers have taken off. Serena's obviously gotten a lot more of the spotlight. Where is Venus in all of this? And has she been overshadowed by her sister?
When they broke onto the scene, half of those finals, they're playing each other. And she's, besides from her sister, she's the most active player with the most singles titles. Besides Sharapova and her sister, she's the only one who's appeared in finals at all four Grand Slams currently on the tournament. I think it's also really important to understand that while we're looking at Serena's comeback to the sport after having a very complicated pregnancy and delivery and the birth of her child, you know, Venus has been battling a chronic illness for many years, and she's come back from a very severe back injury, and everybody talks about Serena's age, and Venus is 2 years older. And so I think that both on the court, but also off the court, where Venus was very much a pioneer on a driving force for equal pay, particularly at Wimbledon, those things and the fact that Venus broke into the sport and then, you know, pulled her little sister along with her. And so that can kind of get overshadowed, but Venus is still playing and she's struggling a little bit with injury right now. But last year and the year before that, she had some really good matches. And I think that it's really important to put that in perspective and remember, I refer everybody to Ava DuVernay's wonderful documentary about Venus called Venus Verse. And it really gives you a sense of appreciation for Venus on her own.
Amira Rose Davis is assistant professor of history at Penn State University and co-host of the Burn It All Down podcast. Amira, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.